Welcome back to KC Currents. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. We just paid a visit to St. Peter Waterway, one of six communities targeted by Greater Kansas City LISC in 2006 as part of their Neighborhoods Now program. St. Peter Waterway will be graduating. LISC says it's a sustainable community now. How do you know when a community is sustainable? What does that look like to you? Join our conversation by calling 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888, or comment on KCUR's Facebook page. Here in studio to talk about building sustainable communities is city planner Daniel Serta. He is vice chair of the Wyandotte County Planning Commission. Welcome, Daniel.
Thank you.
And Micah Kubik, who's senior program officer of Greater Kansas City LISC. That's the Local Initiative Support Corporation. Micah, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Micah, what exactly does it mean that St. Peter Waterway is graduating?
Well, St. Peter Waterway is now a sustainable community, which means that they've achieved a lot of the priorities that the residents themselves set out for themselves back in 2006 when LISC began the Neighborhoods Now program. Everything that we do is in partnership with neighborhoods, is in partnership with residents and organizations, and we have them set goals for themselves. St. Peter Waterway has achieved those goals, and I think if you drive through St. Peter Waterway today versus in 2006, you would see the difference. It's one of those things where you sort of have to see it to believe it, to know it. But it's definitely true. There's a huge change in the housing stock, in the community safety, and just the vibrancy of the neighborhood.
What were those goals specifically? I mean, were they some of those things you just listed?
Sure. So there was a huge priority around community safety, around youth development, around making sure that there was a spirit of community that was strengthened in that neighborhood, and especially around the housing stock, too. It's an older neighborhood, and we wanted to make sure that there was quality, affordable housing there.
So does that mean that they don't need your support anymore?
Well, every neighborhood always has challenges, regardless of where it is, how old it is. Every neighborhood has challenges. So they still need support. They still need support from outside the community, but especially from within the neighborhood. I want to make it really clear that everything that's happened in St. Peter Waterway is because there were a lot of really engaged, really passionate, really great people who were living there and made it possible. So it's not one of those things where LISC is the one that did it. It's really about the neighbors themselves who were passionate enough to do something. And they're going to continue to be engaged because they live there. They have a stake in the future. And that's the way that St. Peter Waterway is going to continue to be sustainable, by the residents themselves making sure that that happens.
But some residents may feel that if there's less support, that their progress might be reversed, that it was that support that maybe pushed them over the edge and enabled them to get to this certain point. But how do you know it's actually sustainable on their own without your support?
Sure. So a lot of what we have done and what CHWC has done and what the residents have done is make sure that they've built capacity inside the neighborhood. So CHWC is a very strong, very, very strong and very, very capable community development corporation that's going to continue to work there regardless.
That's community housing.
Community
of
housing
County.
Of Wyandotte right. County. That's mm-hmm. right. They're going to continue to be there regardless. And we've worked with them to build their capacity over the years to make sure that they're going to be able to keep on keeping on regardless.
But there must be some nervousness about the idea that, okay, now you're not here for us anymore.
There's probably always nervousness because all communities have challenges. But I think the residents of St. Peter Waterway agree, for the most part, that they've reached a pretty sustainable point. We're not going to pull back entirely. We're not going anywhere. LISC is not going anywhere. We're still in this community. We're still in this city. And we're certainly poised to provide assistance to them along the way. But they're at such a stable point and made so much progress over the years that our resources are better devoted to other neighborhoods to help them get to the place where St. Peter Waterway is today.
Well, Daniel Serta, you're a city planner. I mm-hmm. wonder if you've been watching LISC's work in St. Peter Waterway and the other neighborhoods that they work with.
Absolutely. I think one of the things that I find really inspirational about the St. Peter's story in particular is you have this set of circumstances on the ground. You have demographic change that's happening, new residents that are coming in, particularly immigrants, Latino residents that are coming into that area. You have the institutional presence of CHWC, which has come an incredible distance in terms of, you know, from originally organizing itself and beginning some activities there to really pushing forward the elements of this plan. You also have a public role in terms of specific targeted public investments that have been made over the last several years with the able assistance of LISC and some other organizations. I think those are the essential ingredients in really moving a neighborhood forward. It's a combination of taking the social mix that's there, helping that neighborhood organize itself and develop the capacity, especially the grassroots leadership capacity, to sort of begin to direct its own future, and then have that combination of both external funders like LISC and the local government help on the resource side with pulling those pieces together.
Well, it's interesting, and I'm not sure if you heard at the beginning of the story, we heard from Patty Orth, who obviously is immersed in the Catholic community there, that's been there for a long time. Yeah. And one of the things she said is she was surprised that other people cared. She thought only people in her community cared about the neighborhood. And I wonder if that's something that happens when people start talking outside of their boundaries.
It absolutely does. I mean, there are sometimes social disconnects within neighborhoods, particularly when neighborhoods are going through demographic transitions. And a lot of the core in Kansas City, Kansas, this is true in parts of Kansas City and Missouri as well, you have really profound cultural differences, sometimes obstacles of issues like language and just the newness of some people that you have to overcome. But you often have that established core. There has been an unevenness, to be frank about it, over the last several decades in the level of direct governmental activity, local government attention to a lot of these neighborhoods, and that creates that sense of isolation. I worked with a number of urban core neighborhoods in Kansas City, Kansas, 20 years ago when I was in graduate school, and there was just this incredible, palpable sense of frustration that people felt like they were sort of in the trenches by themselves. That set of circumstances is changing. There's new life coming in. There's a more directive role. There's more supportive, both technical and financial resource assistance there to help pull together the pieces.
We are live right now and taking your calls. We want to know, how do you know when a community is sustainable? What's going on in your community? What does it look like? Can you tell whether it's sustainable or whether it needs that extra push? Join our conversation and call 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Now, I do wonder, Daniel Serta, you've been working in Wyandotte County for a long time, and now you're vice chair of the Planning Commission.
Actually, I just concluded my term as vice chair of the Planning Commission.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah,
so,
that just happened this month.
But clearly, you know what's going on in a lot of the neighborhoods there, and I wonder what's happening in St. Peter Waterway, how does it compare to some of the development in other neighborhoods? Are there lessons there? Are there others that are doing similar things?
There are others that are doing similar things. But again, like I said, I don't want to create the sense that there's a simple cookie cutter formula you have to follow. But I had somebody ask me recently, when it does work, what are some of those essential ingredients? And I think it really does come down to that combination of those three things I mentioned. Again, government having kind of a very strong sense of purpose and the willingness to invest very strategically, play a catalytic role in helping development happen. Second part has to do, and this is absolutely, neighborhoods can't get to be sustainable if there is not some concerted focus on building the internal capacity of a neighborhood to move itself forward, as Micah said. And the third part is there has to be the life. There has to be the energy there. And one of the things that an organization like LISC can be very influential in is helping bring together people into that kind of organizing conversation. That's one of the things I think is really admirable about the Neighborhoods Now effort, is that it's helped really crystallize conversations around specific neighborhoods about what the needs are, what the opportunities are, how to move those forward. There are neighborhoods throughout Kansas City, Kansas, that might have one or another of those ingredients, but they haven't quite pulled together the others yet. There are some that are, in some respects, maybe a little bit top-heavy. There's a lot of direct, kind of straight-down governmental assistance into that area, but not that same level of grassroots support. And it hasn't quite gelled in the same way to make it truly sustainable in the way that Mike is describing.
Micah, how do you know about when there's that energy there? What does that look like?
Well, it's, again, one of those things that's easier to see than it is to describe, and easier to see than it is to measure or quantify. But I think if you go to example for Waterway Park, a few years ago, as the segment before described, there was no one in Waterway Park other than people who you did not want to be there because they were engaged in activities that probably would not be considered sustainable. Today, if you go to Waterway Park, there are at least 100 people in the park every single day who are participating in activities, who are just living life. And that's what it means to see that energy and vibrancy. You have to see it. We can't measure it, but we can see it when it happens, and you feel it when you go there.
I want to point out St. Peter Waterway was one of six communities that were part of the Neighborhoods Now project, which continues. The others in KCK are Downtown and Douglas Sumner, and in KCMO, Blue Hills, Ivanhoe, and Scarrett Renaissance. How were those neighborhoods picked? Did they have something to do with those criteria that Daniel's talking about?
Yeah, Daniel's criteria were definitely things that we considered. So we looked at areas that had some level of capacity already, where there was already something going on, where residents themselves were already doing something, were clamoring for change, had organized themselves to some extent, and where there was an institutional partner that we as LISC could work with. Another organization like CHWC needed to be in the area doing something. We looked at where government and the private sector was already putting some investment in, because we realized that none of us can do it by ourselves. The only way community development is successful and sustainable is if there are lots of parties who are coming in together, working together to get something done. And we looked at areas where there was need, obviously. We're not going to go into an area that is already sustainable and try and make it sustainable. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
You're listening to KC Currents on KCUR 89.3 FM. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. We're speaking with Micah Kubik, who is Senior Program Officer of Greater Kansas City LISC, and Daniel Serta, who's a city planner. We're talking about targeting certain neighborhoods for urban development. I wonder, how are those other neighborhoods doing?
So for the most part, they're doing pretty well. They've all made a great deal of progress since we began Neighborhoods Now in 2006. And some of them have some wonderful projects that are coming up that I think are really going to be catalytic and transformational. So, for example, in the Ivanhoe neighborhood, not too far from where we are today, they have the Horace Mann 39th Street project, which tore down a decrepit old school building and is going to repurpose that, transform that entire parcel into senior affordable housing and duplexes for families, at the same time that they've got a new grocery store going in at 39th and Prospect there in Ivanhoe. Those two things combined really have the potential to be game changers for that neighborhood. Or in Blue Hills, you have the new 5008 Prospect Business Center, which opened just last week, which is helping to bring new jobs to neighborhood contractors in Blue Hills.
Do you see signs of change in your neighborhood? Kansas City, join the conversation by calling 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KC Currents. Now, this idea of targeting certain neighborhoods and putting a lot of resources there seems to be getting a lot of traction. You see that in the Green Impact Zone in Central, KCMO, and then the Urban Neighborhood Initiative, which overlaps both the Green Impact Zone and I believe some of the LISC neighborhoods. The Urban Neighborhood Initiative is along Troost. Daniel, what's the idea of targeting resources like this? Why not spread it out to reach as many neighborhoods as possible?
Sure, there is some debate about that. The logic of that is that, you know, governmental public resources in particular tend to be very scant. And we're in a period now, we have to understand, you know, compared to, say, 40 years ago, where the federal government was making very substantial, very direct investments in assistance to cities, that's largely gone. I mean, we're at a level of much reduced funding. So the idea is, in a time of limited public resources, doesn't it make more sense to target those very strategically and work incrementally on focused areas? And you can achieve a certain measure of success doing that. Now, the question becomes, well, how do you eventually get back to those other areas as well? Because, you know, on the long term, you really can't do that to the exclusion of certain parts of a city.
And not every neighborhood meets those criteria.
No. And to be frank, you know, if you look at something like the demographic factors I was talking about, you know, there are some areas that have lost so much population that it really raises substantial questions about the merits of making very targeted investments there.
We have a call here from Kelly in Midtown. Hi, Kelly.
Hello. My comment was about my Midtown neighborhood close to downtown, as much of the residential density in Kansas City rings the downtown area. And since the emphasis on with the city government, I feel, is to promote businesses, especially entertainment venues, neighborhood life has been greatly sacrificed to accommodate a lot of ill effects from entertainment venues, late-night bars, an illegal drug trade that is boosting business at a lot of bars, and our city government has acted to obstruct neighborhoods from traffic calming and effective drug enforcement and it's been very, very much to the detriment of the quality of life here.
And you were wondering about neighborhood associations, too, the role that they play?
Mine is, I feel, extremely weak. There are a lot of impediments to joining the neighborhood association, such as a requirement that you pay a membership fee and pay it 3 months before voting on elected officials. We've had people in the association that have been here 20 years and do apparently nothing. And I think term limits and a wider allowance of people in the neighborhood participating in their association, and also a stronger voice in city government. And I know the new city charter greatly weakened neighborhood associations' ability to implement changes in their community. And,
well,
and that
Kelly,
has
we want to
too.
See what our guests have to say about some of the things you pointed out. Particularly, Kelly points out that she feels that Kansas City, Missouri has really emphasized business development. And you may drive through a city, a neighborhood, and see a lot of businesses, and it looks very vibrant. Is there a kind of trade-off there?
Well, I don't think there should be, and I don't think there has to be. I think, for the most part, strong neighborhoods are ones that also have jobs nearby for residents to go to and to bring income back into the neighborhood. Unfortunately, many neighborhoods, particularly in Kansas City's urban core, the employers left 50 years ago and have not been replaced since, and that's been to the detriment of the neighborhood. So I think we absolutely need to be bringing businesses back into the urban core, but there certainly is a balance that has to be struck between being too accommodating to businesses, especially those that are going to compromise the quality of life. There are some businesses that no neighborhood wants in them for good reasons, and we should all work to do that. But I also want to touch on her point about neighborhood associations being absolutely essential. And this goes to Daniel's point from earlier, too. Unless you have internal capacity in the neighborhood, unless you have a strong resident voice there, you're never going to get anything accomplished. The residents are the ones who have to go to City Hall and demand change. The squeaky wheel always gets the grease there. And the residents are the ones who ultimately are going to be charged with the success of the neighborhood.
What do you notice about the needs of your neighborhood or the assets? Call in 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888 to join the conversation. Now, I do wonder, how do you build those neighborhood organizations if they're not really there or vibrant?
Well, if they're not there, that's a really core dilemma, because Micah alluded to this earlier. You can't have an entity like this just sort of sweep in and offer to do. I mean, you really have to have some willingness. That is one of the things that I think LISC is nationally very effective at, is where there is some level of energy, providing assistance, providing training, providing leadership development opportunities to help a neighborhood get itself organized. I absolutely would underscore what Micah just said. If the city's priorities seem misplaced to people in a community, it is absolutely incumbent upon them to take the steps, and they may need external assistance to get this organized, but to organize themselves and make it very clear that, you know, there's a mismatch there between what the city is doing and what the neighborhood's needs truly are.
Do you see a difference between how Kansas City, Missouri and Kansas City, Kansas and perhaps some of the other municipalities approach urban development like this in neighborhoods?
Oh, there absolutely are. I mean, there are cities like New York City that have these community councils where effectively these broad scale neighborhood associations are actually part of the functioning of city government. They're actually elected resident leaders that have effectively veto power over major developments within their neighborhoods. There have been ideas kicked around about that for the last 30, 40 years about how to most effectively do that. I would just say that the composition is different in those two sides of the state line. I've worked in Kansas City, Missouri as well, and structurally the issues in terms of how City Hall approaches neighborhood associations works somewhat differently in each of those places.
Scott in Kansas City, Kansas, you were going to talk about the unified government. What's particular about that? Have you had experience with working with the unified government?
Yes, I have. Unified government has a history of being kind of difficult, a little slow to change. And I was wondering what your guest reactions were to working here versus working maybe in KC Moe or Overland Park or basically anywhere else in the metro.
Well, Micah, your organization works with both, and I realize it might be kind of sensitive because you need to work well with these organizations. But do you notice a difference in the structure of how they work in neighborhoods?
I think the structure is a little bit different, but I think that's mostly a factor of size. Obviously, Kansas City, Missouri is a little bit larger than Kansas City, Kansas. And, of course, the way City Hall itself is structured on both sides of the state line is a little different. In KCK, the mayor has, frankly, a lot more formal structural power than the mayor in Kansas City, Missouri
does. Interesting. We were just talking about that.
But I would also say that I think it is absolutely true that every single neighborhood resident I've ever talked to, regardless of whether they lived in Kansas City, Kansas, Kansas City, Missouri, Minneapolis, regardless where they are in the country, always thinks that City Hall moves slow and that progress is slow to come. So I think we always have to be mindful of the fact that government is a necessarily slow and bureaucratic structure, and it's going to take us a lot longer than we want it to get things done.
When a community has become revitalized or sustainable, housing costs can go up, and then you can get into questions about gentrification. Are there dangers of making a neighborhood so revitalized that you begin to price people out of that neighborhood? Micah?
Absolutely, that's a danger. I think there's a lot of research out there that shows that oftentimes the fear about gentrification is more pronounced than the reality of it, but it's something that we have to be mindful of. And I think the best way to do that is, again, to always make sure that residents are themselves in charge. If residents are the ones setting the priorities, setting the actions, and frankly, figuring out who's going to do the work, I'd say one of the things that we have learned in our work is that the controversy is often not about the what to do, but rather the who is to do it. And if you have the right institutional partners coming in and doing the work, you can make sure that it happens in a way that helps to avoid some of those concerns about gentrification and interlopers. And you can also take steps through the public sector and elsewhere. You can use tools to make sure that the neighborhood remains open to everyone, because I think we all have discovered that mixed income neighborhoods are really the ones that are most sustainable over the long term and the most vibrant.
Daniel, any thoughts?
Well, I would say I absolutely agree with everything Micah just said. Kansas City, Kansas, we have a mismatch often between employers and the capabilities of residents. And that, to me, raises the question of government being very clear in what its objectives are in supporting development. You know, our recent discussion, for example, in Kansas City, Kansas, around urban redevelopment has focused on this idea that development really needs to be geared to meeting the needs and help building the capacity and level of opportunity for people that are within the community, so that as neighborhoods redevelop, it is the current residents of those neighborhoods that are able to share in the benefits of that redevelopment. It's not simply just a matter of drawing in outside companies and kind of plopping them down and saying, look, we've improved this neighborhood. It's a matter of more organically working with residents to help share the benefits of the development as it happens.
Well, I want to thank you both for joining us. Daniel Serta, city planner and vice chair of the Wyandotte County Planning Commission. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And Micah Kubik of Greater Kansas City LISC. It was great talking to you.
Thank you.